This week on RSBNB Update, it's time for the Art of Archaeology. Everything from concept art to finished environments. Plus, the makings of archaeology going back 2+ years. And finally, The Drop is coming back, all for mental health awareness. This is RSBNB Update, episode 774, recorded Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. Oops, they dropped it. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update this week. We're continuing the archaeology front. We're well into the third week of this skill, and, you know, it's proven to be something that's actually still keeping my interest. My only few diversions have been for a couple of yak track tasks, but we'll of course get to all of that later. Joining Tannis and myself this week is Zant. I think we last had you on around the bank rework episode last year. I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, I was on for the bank rework.
Yeah, and we thought we'd have you on because, you know, we're going to be discussing something called environment art this week, and that just happens to be your wheelhouse, and that's something that you and I have been in contact with since the beginning of archaeology and when we first started seeing what some of the dig sites were going to look like, and, you know, you and I were going back and forth on that, and it just seemed like a natural fit for this week.
Yeah, I was really excited when I saw at RuneFest that they actually were going to introduce a lot of new locations into the game. With archaeology, that's something that kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
So it was a nice treat.
Yeah. And, you know, the big one last year, of course, was Anachronia, but that's a topic for a different day. And maybe we'll touch on that a bit about the discussion we were having about how Anachronia and these dig sites are different nonetheless. But, you know, of course, we also have the live stream to talk about and patch notes, which we're going to get into right now. But before we do that, you can find full show notes to follow along at update.rsbnb.com. I'm Shane12088, and Tannis, I mean, you've been awfully quiet this episode, but you're here, of course. Tannis.
I am always here. Yes, Shane. I'm your Jiminy Cricket. Try to keep you from killing too many NPCs.
Yeah, people tend to try and keep me in check on this, don't they?
We try.
All right. So as I mentioned this week, you know, it's been one of the first quiet weeks here in relation to the archaeology launch in terms of the patch notes that we have. So starting off with that, first and foremost in the patch notes this week, they have tweaked the number of drop rates for the Inquisitor staff and the Spear of Annihilation tip. And, you know, we were talking about these last week on the podcast with David because, you know, these are, you know, tier 92 weapons in the case of the Masterwork Spear of Annihilation. And I think, what is it, a tier 80-ish staff, I think, that functions more like a tier 87 in relation to the Inquisitor staff. And they were just coming into the game far too often. Oh, 97, he said, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, people were wondering, of course, what exactly does this mean? What did you do with the rates on this? And they actually did spell this out on the live stream this week. And as it so happens, what they did is they made it so that the staff pieces are only obtainable in the General Caridat dig site while the pylon is active. And the drop rates have been decreased during that time, making it more rare. It's also going to be available inside the Praetorium, which is a much better rate than inside the main fortress, and the Praetorium chances also increase while the pylon is active, and then the drop rates will further increase for each hotspot inside the Praetorium as you increase your level in archaeology. So it's been made a lot more rare, and it becomes more common as you level up, and even more so if you're working on it in the pylon sense. I know people who are going for 99, they got two or three staff piece drops by just playing archaeology during pylon half hour. So you can see how common it was. And in relation to Spear of Annihilation, they did the same kind of thing as they did for the staff piece. Becomes more common now, as you level up.
Now, was that just a tip, Shane?
You know, I was reading the notes this week, and I knew someone was going to ask that. I didn't think it would be you, but okay. Okay.
What, did you expect it to be me?
Well, no. I just thought it would be someone. I mean, I was thinking it was when you were on the show, but I was just thinking it was going to come from somewhere in the producer's chat, you know?
Where's the fun in that, Shane?
And Zan, you're always on your best behavior, so no, it's not you.
Right.
All right. Thank you, Tanis. Jesus. Mm-hmm. Players can now enter the Caridet Praetorium without a Ring of Visibility. Previously, you would have needed this or the reward that came from the end of Sliske's endgame. And this was something that threw players when they first started off with that. And everybody forgets that this is one of the big rewards that came from the Desert Treasure Quest. So that's no longer needed for entering the Praetorium. Yeah. Have you done Sliske's endgame?
Not yet. I'm procrastinating it.
All right.
I don't want to touch that maze.
Yeah.
Don't blame me.
Yeah, that was... You think it's bad, but it was bad doing that 2 days before Christmas at the same time you're also producing a clip show.
I remember when that quest launched, I was kind of excited for it to come out, and then I just didn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm kind of happy I didn't, because now I have I don't know, it'll be a lot easier if I have a decent little bit of help going through it if I get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next I can't even imagine.
Next up, the Impsold perk will now send the appropriate resources to the metal bank and material storage when you're using that perk, which is good. Because, you know, you don't want to have those go into the main bank. That's just more cleaning that you need to do up. So that's good. Both the Pontifex Signet Ring and the Legatus Pendant can now be added to the tool belt.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that is a good thing. I've contributed, I think, two of these to collections by accident when I was handing in Zaros related collections, and you know, it's fine because you get enough of them, but each one costs a dragon stone, so you're sinking that into the collection at that point. So it's good that you can now just add these to the tool belt and you don't need to worry. For anybody who hasn't been there yet, you just need to use these to cross. One of them is the maximum security barrier, and I forget what the other one is needed to cross, but there are different kinds of barriers that you cross with these ring and necklace equipped. The resourceful aura now works with archaeology, and of course this is only for the material caches. So this is good for anybody who's, you know, using it as the true gathering skill and just gathering the materials on their own. Reminder of what the resourceful aura does. For archaeology, it gives you a 10% chance to not deplete a resource when excavating. So it's good for those high-level materials that you're going for that you might only get, you know, two or three of before they disappear if you've just unlocked them. So keep that in mind when you're farming those materials. The Fortune Ancient Invention perk has an increased chance to activate on level 20 augmented items. They didn't bake that in, I guess, for people who are using level 20 Maddox in that case. The Everlight music track can now be unlocked by entering the base of the lighthouse. Finding a Dragon Maddox is an entry in your adventurer's log, and of course those come from either Big Game Hunter or opening a Tetra Compass chest. The contents of your material storage are now viewable from the archaeology journal via the information option.
This is a good one.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah. Because previously you'd have to go back to one of the restoration tables in order to do that, or one of the benches, and you know, you'd have to look. But now you can just access that all from wherever you are, and just, you know, gives you more reason to be using that journal. Yeah, this is a really good one. Tetra Compass pieces now use the artifact inspect option, displaying the requirements to make a complete Tetra Compass, so you can see how far along you are and what materials you need without going to a bench for this, which is nice. Excavating a Tetra Compass reward will now use the usual blue archaeology excavation bar above your head to give you a progress indicator on how long it will take. You can now use Surge and Bladed Dive inside the Forge area within the Warforged dig site. The Iron Man plaque in Edgeville has been updated with the names of the first Iron Man and Hardcore Iron Man to reach 99 archaeology. Congratulations.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the true achievement for this, not these people, you know, who have multiple party hats and are sinking billions and billions in GP with their networks and networks upon people doing that. These are the achievements we live for. Archaeology microsites now have a minimum of 3 material caches of each type available at that site. And so now the question is for both of you, is this one better than the one about being able to see your material storage from the journal? Or is the next one even better that says archaeology dig sites when they have a minimum of 2 material caches of each material specific to that site? Because some only had 1 before. So are these more important to you guys than being able to see your material storage from your journal?
I think the journal thing is nice, but this, you know, adding more of these resources in the world is kind of something I feel like was needed.
Yeah.
So see, I'm glad they have that in here. So I think that kind of takes the cake for me.
And I got to go the other way because, one, materials fell a little bit, which, I mean, it's bound to happen. But I really like to be able to, if you are gathering for yourself, then the journal entry is, I mean, that's great. But, yeah, I don't know. Did you notice that, Shane, like the material prices are coming down a little bit?
No, I didn't, because I haven't bought any.
Yeah. Well, I haven't bought any, but I sell them.
So, oh, okay.
That's how I fund my Dragonmatic. I've almost got my second one.
How do you feel about that?
I'm not looking forward to that.
How do you feel about that then, with the prices coming down? Because, you know, obviously for first 3 weeks, prices are high.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's bound to happen. And it's a matter of, like, you got to kind of think how much stimulus the economy is going to get out of, like, a new skill like that. So, I mean, that was going to happen, but I felt like this hastened it a little bit. And I really didn't think, like, it was scarce because, the only people that, like, had to pay those kind of prices were the ones that were trying to, you know, move really quickly. Like,
yeah,
you could go out and get it. Like, I never had trouble getting my own for myself or anything. So, yeah, that's why I got to go with the journal.
All right. Fair enough. The augmented Masterwork Spear of Annihilation no longer loses its Masterwork upgrades when players die in the wilderness or when using an augmentation dissolver. I feel like we had a similar patch note to this when the Masterwork armor came out.
Yeah.
Similar kind of issue.
Familiar.
Yeah. And finally, added an option to deactivate the auto screener version 1080. And I just like to add in a note on this, and I don't know if this is as intended or not. I haven't decided if I'm going to file a bug report, but using the auto screener does not work for the Yak Track screen soil tasks.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm. It wants you to go to the well, huh?
Yeah, it does. So I don't know if that's a bug or working as intended. I'm not sure if I should submit that as a bug.
You got an auto screener, Shane?
Yeah.
Kidding me.
What, you didn't?
No, I don't have no auto screener. But I don't have a lot of mysteries done or collections
either. Oh, okay. All what I've been doing through this and why it hasn't felt like a grind is every mystery that I can with the level is complete. Every collection to the level I can complete it is complete.
Okay. Well, I did not exactly go that way. I've just been, I don't know, at the highest place I could, I guess, which I don't always get to.
Yeah, my current favorite collection for either Chronotes or Tetracompass pieces is Ceridoman 2.
Okay. I've been wondering. I'm guessing at some point I'm going to have to switch Junior. I'm materials to Chronotes.
Yeah, and Chronotes are a little bit more difficult too, because you do need the higher level for them. You know, I think to do a Ceridoman 2 or a Bandos 1 or something to that effect. So.
Oh yeah.
But that's it for the patch notes this week. I think I'm probably going to go with the Archaeology Journal myself, thinking about it. It's interesting to hear your guys' thoughts on that. But
I don't think I'd trade it. It's really nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, it's just that new level of polish that we've seen with this skill that, you know, continues even 3 weeks later, and why it's so good. And, you know, this is actually a good time to talk about this, and I'll include a link at the end of the show for it. It's not out yet. It's pending editing, but my Informer article this month is actually called The Unseen Benefits of Archaeology, or The Underappreciated Benefits of Archaeology, because you can see some of them. The TLDR is that the first one was quality of life fixes, which we all saw coming in. Number two is improved player count, because, you know, it's shot up since the skill came out and it's stayed. And the third one is that Jagex is broken free of needing to do what the players tell them to do in surveys and polls. And this was actually really freaky when I was writing this, because, you know, Tanis, I messaged you on this, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in April of 2018, I wrote an article called 5 Steps to Harmony with Jagex. So 2 years ago, I effectively predicted what happened with archaeology, because if you look at that, I said that they're going to have a string of successes. That'll be the player-owned farm, the mining and smithing rework, and then you had other updates in 2019, like Anachronia, the bank rework, 120 farming and 120 herblore, and that pushes them further on. And then this would, following that, we'd see Jagex releasing an update that's not driven by the players, though they'd still use surveys and ask pointed questions, which is what I said 2 years ago, and that's what they did for archaeology. And that it would be a surprise announcement and no one would anticipate it. And if you go back to Mod Shawnee's announcement, and in general, players were theorizing it, but nobody was really expecting it, it was a surprise at the time. And the players enjoyed it. And what this opens up for them going forward is, you know, something that I don't think anybody can anticipate. It's going to change the game in ways that you can't imagine. So be sure to give that a read. And it was a little freaky seeing 2 years ago that the arc I had planned for them has actually come true mostly. You remember us talking about that, right?
Yeah. No, I do. And yeah, if they hadn't hit that little rough patch in after Anachronia, I think, boy, could you imagine? Like,
yeah.
So, I mean and then again, I guess that really doesn't had no impact. Like, archaeology was still cruising right along, right where it was supposed
to
be.
Yeah, we'll talk about the timeline in the Making of Archaeology live stream. But, you know, you look back 18 months, these are some of the biggest game updates that they've ever had. Mining and smithing, bank rework, 120 herblore, 120 farming, Anachronia, archaeology. Something has changed.
Oh.
We're in a different era at this point. And, you know, it all started with those 5 steps, which, you know, maybe the 5-step article is the one I should be telling people to read, because that's the one that's looking prophetic at this point in time. But I don't know. Let's talk about the art, because that's, of course, what everybody is here for. And we'll, of course, at this point in time, I'll try and talk about what we're describing. But for those watching on video, you're going to, of course, see the benefit of the video version of the podcast at this time. So what they did this week is they posted a number of screenshots from the various art stations of the environment designers and Tanis and Zant. I've shared my screen so you guys can see exactly what I'm looking at this point in time, because I think that's going to be important for our discussion here. So they, of course, share an overview of the Everlight dig site. They also share a picture of the Elite Archaeology skill outfit, Carid Et, as it was back in the day with the fortress and all the various pylons, Stormguard Citadel's entrance, the portal, and then, of course, the main area inside the Warforged dig site. And then from there, we can dig and dive. Get it? We're still doing these dig puns all these times after. we can dive right into the art station portfolios of the various designers out there. So let's hope that this works, because apparently the art station website is currently under heavy load.
It hasn't been loading for me either.
Well, this is just peachy then. Let's see. Can I? Yes, I got one of them up with.
Okay, cool.
With this, so let's start. Let's start off with the first dig site then, Carid Et, and look at some of these photos here that they've posted on here. And, you know, I think this is something that we theorized from the very beginning on this, is that if you read the sidebar on these art stations, it says that outsourced assets were created by Game Shastra. I haven't heard of exactly who that is, but that's a third-party studio that Jagex was working with. So we don't exactly know which of these assets on here are outsourced, but we had this theory going in that a lot of the graphical, I guess we could say, embellishments of these dig sites, and we saw the same thing with Anachronia, definitely had the markings of a third-party studio on them. And in our discussions with Osborne last year, he said that, yeah, you know, we're working with a third-party studio on a number of projects, and we knew that the activity pets would be one of them, but we didn't exactly know what the dig sites would have looked like. So this is something that I think has developed over time. And, you know, it's just a different level of polish that we hadn't seen from Jagex before on this. You know, like, you know, look at this dilapidated church, for example, at Carid Et. It's just one of the
examples. Glass shade or two.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, that's one of the first times I've seen that in this game.
Okay, and we should be clear that effectively what that allows in looking at this at this screenshot is that this is simulating actual stained glass, because if you go to that place at the Carid Et dig site, there's one of those shadow anchors there, and based on this, if you light up that shadow anchor, it will illuminate through the glass. That's really neat.
That's really neat. I didn't realize that. I haven't really explored Carid Et too much yet. But that's one of the... I saw a screenshot of that specific window right there on Reddit, I believe.
Yeah.
And it looks really good. I can't wait to see what else they're going to do with that moving forward.
Yeah, and this is such a huge step up from, you know, say Prif, because Prif has lots of stained glass, but they're just textures, and if you zoom in really close on them,
it's making Prif kind of feel out of date in certain areas.
No, that is not a high quality. Should we call for a graphical rework of Prif now?
Oh, no.
Well, maybe not entirely, but just of the textures.
It never ends.
Where's the time gone?
Hey, it was six years ago, 2014.
At a certain point, I feel like it might be worth just going through the game or putting some effort into that and just getting everything up to a certain level that's more recent, that is easier to get up to that level.
Like,
I'm not saying like go to Varrock and remake it already, but things like Prif, where they probably have better textures already for it, going ahead and trying to implement those where they can.
Yeah, or Lumbridge starting area 2 would be interesting, because there's stained glass in the Lumbridge Church.
So. And please, just get these new trees everywhere.
Yeah, and you know, we'll get to that when we get to Stormguard, but and you can see them at Everlight too. And I was wondering, when I was first going through Everlight, is this actually going to be a tree texture that's capable with wind? And sure enough, you get to Stormguard, and they're blowing in the wind, which is something you'd never seen before in RS. But I got some more Carid et photos this time from the outside angle of it. You can see the Dominion Tower in the background and just, you know, a player model there for scale of what they wanted to do on the outside.
I love how they kind of worked this into the existing environment.
Yeah, because it feels natural, right?
Yeah, and it kind of improved the surrounding area a little bit too, because before the terrain was a little bit more, it just looked dated.
Yeah.
And now we've got these actual like rock assets in here, you know, stapled around the terrain. Right. It looks really nice.
I think we need to have a talk about this. So we're of course talking about the rocks on the top end of the dig site here, which are something that they highlighted on stream. But you were talking about a similar thing on Anachronia that doesn't really work out that well.
Yeah, so, and this isn't exclusive to Anachronia. It's been kind of, I'd say about a span of about 2 to 3 years of RuneScape art kind of had this trend with it, where for really heightened pieces of the terrain where they need to represent cliffs, they would just use the height map and paint texture on it, which, you know, it looks fine in most places, but when it gets really up close to where your character's going to be, like an Anachronia in some places, it makes it difficult to tell, well, is this somewhere I can walk, or is this somewhere that I can't walk? It's just kind of all looks the same. But now that they're actually starting to add in some actual terrain assets here, like these rocks, and using those to terrace the terrain a bit, it really separates that and makes it feel a little bit more realistic. And also with Anachronia, I feel like that kind of thing would have helped out a lot with actually identifying where you can actually walk and where you can't, because, you know, I understand that was an issue with that update.
That was our only real complaint with that update at the time.
But even areas like White Wolf Mountain now, I believe, like I feel like that could be improved a lot with actual like rock assets, because it's just, it looks like terrain sculpting with just, you know, the rock texture kind of put on top of it, which, I mean, at a distance looks fine, but once you get up close to it, it's like, oh.
And if you're trying to do it cheaply, then that works.
Yeah.
So,
but it seems that they're starting to get stuff together with that.
And I'm betting we have more of this inside Carid et as well, and these other screenshots that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they talked about this in the live stream and longevity testing. There were meant to be more agility shortcuts in these dig sites, but they just decided that, you know, let the player walk through them so that they don't need to be constantly traversing agility shortcuts. Now, here's a complicated one. We're looking at one of the ones inside the prison at Carid et, and I'm betting that most of these assets that we're seeing in these ones are actually assets that were placed on the map and not necessarily just, you know, painted on, I guess, as you were saying before, right?
Yeah, these are actual models that are placed around the environment.
Yeah, and this is something
what I meant before is, you know how the ground in RuneScape,
right?
It can be sculpted and raised certain ways to create mountains and stuff. That's separate from like placing a rock on the ground.
Sure.
You understand what I mean?
The, yeah.
So, okay. I'm sorry if I wasn't clear.
Yeah,
before.
That's fine. It's fine.
But yeah, it looks like everything has a lot more ground decoration around, just a lot more detail, and it's really nice.
Yeah, and especially, you know, we've been saying this just because it increases the immersion so much in these dig sites.
Yeah, and the one thing I've really started to notice that they've done with these environments is they have a better sense of scale than they used to. Like, even though that you still have, you know, inside you still have the black background, like RuneScape's always had, it still feels like a vast, you know, enclosed interior just because of how big everything is now. They're actually able to put that degree of scale into it.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're also able to see that now with the camera options, because previously camera options were so tight in RS. Now with the Freedom camera, you can zoom all the way out, and you can get a, you can really get a good perspective of how tiny your character is compared to some of these environments.
I had to turn that option off specifically for me because I would always play with it all the way out, and it was starting to become a problem. Yeah. So I had to turn it off.
Yeah. More prisons or more pictures of the prison here, and then just a general overview of the vault and the final you know, this is where one of the final mysteries takes place, and Caridad it unlocks at a series of 4 archaeology levels. And just the detailing on this, you know, even in the fortress, it's just so nice.
It's really nice.
All right, let's move on then to the Infernal Source, because I think
one
this,
more thing on oh, Caridad, sure. I think.
Which screenshot would you like me to pull up for that?
Kind of more general. I just, okay. You know, I kind of wish overall with this environment that they could have done something. You know, I mentioned earlier that they did a really good job making it feel like it has a good sense of scale to it. It feels like a, you know, pretty vast little area to explore, whereas, you know, RuneScape places in the past, they feel kind of enclosed. I wish they would have done something similar to how they've done in the Infernal Source and even the Heart of Gilinor, where they use the skybox to make it actually feel like an interior.
Right, because you just have a when you look up, glow.
Yeah, that kind of feels a bit jarring. And even something simple, I'm trying to think of an area they've done this really well, other than Heart of Gilinor and the Source.
Shattered Worlds.
Yeah, Shattered Worlds is a good place where they actually put, you know, nice details into the skybox. And, oh, Telos' Arena, that's a good spot, too. Because that beam they have that is going all the way down there, I believe that's actually just on the skybox. So, I don't know, more use of that to actually make interiors still have that RuneScape-y, you know, setup to them, but feel like they've got an actual backdrop to them. And there's that one screenshot you just passed where you can actually see the sky coming in from the top of the dungeon entrance when you're in Caridad in the starting room. That's just a really neat little detail I've noticed that I really like.
I don't know which one you're mentioning.
So at the dungeon entrances where there's a little shaft going up into back up to the mainland. If you're down in the dungeon now and you look up to that, you can actually see blue. You can actually see the sky through it.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
And there's I never
noticed
that. A little
bit of bloom glow there, too. It's really nice. Yeah, that one right there. Check that one out.
Oh, this is, this is Infernal Source. Okay.
My bad. That's not
Caridad. Yes.
Yeah, that's the Star Lodge.
Wow, you're right. You can actually see the light from up above.
That was such a neat little detail.
And these
are
in-game screenshots, folks. These aren't, you know, pre-renders. Which, you know, really says something about what we're looking at here. And the quality of RuneScape 3 graphics in 2020. So, all right. Infernal Source at the top. And, I mean, lots of detail in the carts, as we mentioned. You know, these are probably third-party assets, if you imagine so, like to create a minecart like that.
I love how they're starting to get little pieces of metal in there that have actual roughness and smoothness to them.
Oh, yeah.
So there's actually a little bit of shininess.
Oh, yeah, you can really see that on the wheel.
Yeah, there's a couple small places like that where they really start to implement that.
Yeah, and you know, another one of those is the money tree with 120 farming.
Yeah. Yes, true.
They did say those would be used in archaeology.
The railing in the Archaeology Guild, I think, has that too.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. The Dungeon of Disorder. Once again, another immaculate looking area, and you can see, you know, the lighting in these areas, and if you compare that to, you know, what we would have had ages ago in, you know, RS2, it just doesn't compare. It's, you know, like AAA game level almost, you could say, on that one. Same thing with your entrance to the Dungeon of Disorder, that huge furnace area. So that's nice. Continuing on with the Caridad theme, and, you know, I'm wondering, do you think that light source up there was designed to be a light, or do you think it was designed to be the sky coming in from up above?
It's hard to tell, but I think they just have a plane up there that, you know, just like a blue plane up there that you can see when you're looking up. And the light's just there to kind of make it feel like it's actually there. I don't know.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you go.
That's just a nice little detail.
You go deeper, then you have the ritual site here with the portal that takes you under the wilderness, and there was talk about the time if this would actually be part of the wilderness, but they decided against doing that in Crit.
That would have been crazy.
With all the gargoyles and the mystery you needed the cows for. And, you know, this was one of the design briefs is, okay, we're going to have a dig site in the sky. We're also going to effectively have a dig site in hell, which is the infernal source.
This place really makes good use of the volumetric lighting. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, when we first saw that with Menaphos, that's when that option came out. It looked cheap, and it was just being
a really bad graining effect to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was like, okay, we're just putting sun beams in for no reason, but here it's actually, you know, being used to cast shadows and whatnot, so it's actually really nice.
I also love how the new depth of field effect looks in the Infernal Source. It really does help make it feel kind of expansive beyond the area that we have to explore.
Right.
Like, things are kind of just obscured off, and you don't know what's back there.
Yeah, you know, speaking of depth of field, another place I find you get more benefit out of it than, say, Everlight is Anachronia.
I haven't been to Anachronia since it's been a thing.
Yeah. Tannis, I should probably ask you, how has accessibility been on the dig sites for you compared to what we talked about with Anachronia?
Yeah, for the most part, not bad at all. Like, way, 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 way better than Anachronia. Stormguard can get iffy at times, but so, and Everlight both. Other than that, it's not bad at all. And I'm sitting here realizing now, like, no wonder I don't think a lot about this stuff, because you're describing all this stuff. I'm like, huh, that must be there.
Yeah, and another
not real sure.
And another thing on the screenshot here is you can see that where the lava is coming out of the fixtures, you can see that is illuminating, and you know, if you were to cast that down, it's, you know, bouncing down onto the various skulls down below in the Infernal Source as well. And you know, this is just,
I love how you can see
bouncing
with this last picture here that the depth of field effect actually has a near defocus as well. So the statues that are close to the camera, are actually blurred. So it has some defocusing going on to things near the camera instead of things just far away from it. So that actually kind of shows that they're actually using a proper aperture system for that.
Yeah, and you know, I never noticed that.
That looks great. The fact that you didn't notice it just shows how good of an effect it is.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until you pointed it out. And for
that's
people,
what depth of field kind of tries to do. It just mimics the effect that the effect of focusing on things like our eyes do.
Yeah,
and like a camera does.
And for people wondering, I'm highlighting that portion with the mouse on the video version of this, and I realize we're going, you know, very deep on the video side of this right now, and that's fine. But I encourage everybody listening on audio to at least have a look at the screenshots that are posted here, because you know, even if you don't have the levels, you're going to be able to appreciate some of the things they did for these. So let's move on to Everlight now, which is one of the ones that I. For me, it's a close tie between Everlight and Stormguard, which are my two favorites. We'll save that for the end of this, because I think we might all have different favorites for this. So starting off here, we have the Everlight campsite, and you can see the depth of field effect again, and you can also see the swamp area from the My Rec Quest series as well, the Mire Ditch, as it's called. So that's there. And we, of course, remember hearing all about the ice scene back then. And then we got this shot here. And I guess this is taken from the path leading up south of the Araxi Cave, that if you were to go into free camera mode, you could actually potentially see the Everlight Lighthouse, which isn't something I have done yet. And perhaps I should, because, oh, my God.
Oh, I actually love how they made that path completely accessible from the north.
Yeah.
Like, you can walk all the way down that now. That's really neat.
And you can also access it from Berg de Rot through the south as well if you wanted to.
That's actually the first thing I did when archaeology launched. I got the medallion and teleported there, took the boat over just to see this place.
And you know,
you can actually explore it a decent bit before you unlock it.
Yeah, and this is actually a fun little fact. The medallion, you can actually use that medallion to teleport from the Everlight site to the Barrows and all the other things on there on that teleport medallion, and it won't use a charge. And this is actually really good.
In the region.
It counts as if you're in the region, and this is really good for gathering Silthril and Ceridoman stars.
Noted.
Because that's awesome. Where the primary cache site is for Silthril and Ceridoman stars is at the Barrows. So just keep that in mind, everyone, that Everlight has this neat little thing going around where you can teleport freely. Then we have a top-down view of the Everlight Acropolis. And, you know, all this stuff is modeled on ancient Greek mythology and, you know, even the naming as such. And that's, you know, what we get in the Icene history as well. And it's also worth noting that I'm not at the level yet where that you're able to do this, but you are able to go underwater and into the Everlight Lighthouse. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I haven't unlocked anything.
Must be at a later level.
See, aren't we? Aren't
Do you know what level that is?
I think it's like 107.
Oh my gosh.
See, yeah.
I'll watch it on YouTube.
Do this exact same thing again next time, Jagex. Just put this in a bottle and do it again.
Because it's so perfect from the design side to the art side to the implementation and the testing. Oh.
This area is everything I could have hoped it would have been.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's why I think Everlight is possibly my favorite. You might convince me of that once we get to Stormguard, but yes.
I hate to admit it, but this is one of those areas that makes me wish we had even more draw distance.
Yeah,
because there are certain points where I wish you could just see the lighthouse.
Right, and if you're on Ultra, that might not even be enough.
And actually, you know, I feel like that was one of the things that I was questioning with Everlight when we were seeing it in the early builds before it released, is it felt like the fog was really close in for what we've been experiencing recently with how they've been doing the graphics.
Right.
And it kind of was almost reminiscent of Aldrin Skip in a way.
Huh.
But, okay. I feel like the problem that I had with that is it really did a weird thing with the sense of size of the area.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking about this actually in the server a little bit after the update came out. But when Depth of Field actually launched, I feel like that actually helped a lot with this. It put a clear focus on assets that are in front of you. In particular, most distances when you're walking on the Everlight, that's the lighthouse. So I don't know. The Depth of Field update, I think, benefited Everlight a lot.
Yeah, and that's my sense of it, too.
Yeah, like, and especially other areas that have that really closed-in fog. Like, that's the kind of effect that really makes those areas feel nice and atmospheric. And not just like, oh, we're...
And I mean, even look at this one here from the amphitheater. We're looking at the Everlight amphitheater screenshot on Alex's art station. And, you know, you can see the lighthouse in the back, blurred skybox, and it just all works so nicely with the lighting and the glows. It's perfect.
Something else about Everlight that's really great too is the ground decoration is beautiful. There's a lot of little blue flowers on the ground.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so nice.
Then there's little wisps of light as well falling from the lighthouse that go underwater. So.
And some of this ground decoration actually is, you know, actual like geometry now.
Yeah, you know, I'm betting such. that was third party studio as well, right?
Probably. Looks really nice though.
Most of the stuff
they're adding that in. But yeah, this environment looks really great.
All right,
I absolutely love Everlight.
Time to go underwater, Everlight caves.
Oh, so this is what it looks like.
Once again, you know, I think dark environments are really hard to do and hard to get right because they can be either too dark or they can look, you know, fake in a way. But I think this is the right balance here, especially when you look at the lighting and the depth of field effect, even having a roll underground with this. So I haven't been there yet, so this is my first look at it.
Yeah, I can't wait to eventually get here. This looks nice.
More of the caves and, you know.
So if this is underwater, okay, that's not underwater.
Underground, sorry.
Okay. I was going to say, how is there water underwater?
Right. Then the lower level of Everlight, obviously, getting into the lighthouse. It's beautiful. Perfect. Here's the underwater sense right here.
That is gorgeous. Wow. That's the first time I've seen this.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm not at the archaeology level yet to unlock this, but it's all here.
Isn't it?
I think it's 107. Don't quote me on that. I know it's high.
So much depth to this.
Well, I have the motivation to go for it now.
I know, me too. I was thinking of stopping at, I was thinking yeah. of stopping at 81 after I got my farming relic.
That's one of the things I really like about this skill. You know, even just getting to see some of these locations is motivation to train it and get up there in the levels.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't even gotten to see Stormguard for myself yet, and that's like the main thing pushing me to train it.
What size monitor and resolution do you use at?
1080p.
Okay. I was wondering if you were one of the people, you know, using 4K, and I was wondering how works at 4K for you.
I'm due some PC upgrades soon, so hopefully in the near future.
Because, you know, once we get this UI scaling in, there's going to be plenty of reason to play RuneScape.
Finally.
4K.
Yeah. That's one of the things that's honestly made me a little bit hesitant to upgrade.
Yep.
Because, this is a game I constantly play.
Right. And that's what I tell people is that, you know, if you're streaming at 1080p or you're doing 1080p content, a 1080p monitor is best to get, because otherwise you got to go for 4K, because you can't really scale a 1440p down to 1080p that well, because it's not an even number. And it just costs so much to drive a game at 4K these days. So you're pretty much better off sticking at 1080p if that's the content you're creating.
It's just not there yet.
Yeah. Then we have the top-down view from the top of the lighthouse.
It's a Sheikah Tower.
The Witch?
Oh, nobody here's played Breath of the Wild?
I haven't.
Unfortunate. Actually, I think Mod Osborne made a Breath of the Wild joke about this when they were showing it off for the first time.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
On the live stream.
And then we got some more Everlight here. We've seen most of these angles before, so I'll go through this.
Oh, that's another good shot.
Another shot of the depth of field.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm so happy they finally released the depth of field, because they were teasing that
for quite a while. Like, the question I have is, do we have near field like that in-game?
I don't think anywhere that it's noticeable, but maybe?
Because I meant to, like if you go to this area and you activate your free camera, are you going to see depth of field and near field like this, where it blurs the close stuff too? Or is that something that they enabled in the engine for these screenshots?
Yeah, that's what I was about to suggest. I feel like the latter might be it.
Yeah. Because it'd be nice if we could get near field like that too.
Huh. I'll have to check that out and see.
There it is again. Unless these screenshots are edited, but I don't think that would be the best thing to do.
They should have a fairly easy way to just control the distance of the depth.
Yeah.
And for screenshots, obviously you want that to look really nice.
You can see a bit of it here in the front on the amphitheater.
The new trees?
Yeah, we'll see more of those as we get to Stormguard. And, you know, here I was thinking we would need video to show all this off, but these are the perfect angles for all of us just to use these ArtStation photos.
And the thing I love about these environments as well, they're not so expansive that it's hard to understand the area.
Oh, yeah, and it's not jarring either.
They're pretty concise, but there's a lot to explore.
Yeah.
It's not over the top, and it's not, you know, too little.
Oh, here's another underwater shot.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
And, you know, underwater in RuneScape has always been a niche thing, you know, from the diving helmet apparatus to the pirate quests and even the tutorial island one. It seemed kind of cheap, and, you know, you really didn't really truly see what underwater looked like in RS until we're now looking at this. So,
yeah,
truly a different era, I think.
I thought the tutorial island underwater looked pretty decent.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was recent. All right, let's move on to Stormguard.
Yes.
So this is, of course, at level 70 archaeology. We'll start off with, I believe these are Alex's. So, I mean, not much to see here on top. We all start off at the top. You can see the ranch and the player-owned farm.
This is really starting to make some of these areas look congested.
The portal. And then, bam, the first shot here.
Oh, my gosh, it's so gorgeous.
Now, one thing we also have at Stormguard that I don't know if you guys have noticed is that in addition to skyboxes, if you pan the camera down, you can actually see Gilinor from up above. I don't know exactly what area they chose, but there is a blurred out effective version of the world down below us. So there's not only a skybox, there's a box down below that shows what the world would look like.
I'd be amazed if they literally put it over the exact spot it should be on the skybox.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to figure out, is where is this, and is this in that exact location?
Someone will have to look into that. That's interesting.
Like, I mean, obviously they can't put it in the physical map that high up,
but
they can just determine where that would be and make it a canonical location.
Yeah, they can put the correct image on the skybox.
Yeah. And
these little tricks with the skybox like that, you know, that's the same thing I was talking about within Caradet that I wish they would start doing with interiors.
Right. So, you know, out of everything we've seen from Infernal Source and Everlight and now Stormguard, these all have really expansive skyboxes. But there's nothing like that at Caradet. And I'm guessing, is that because it's inside that they don't do that? Like, it's inside of a fortress?
They could do something inside, you know. Like, look at I'm trying to think of the location. I'm blanking. Look at Heart of Gilinor, for example. That looks like it has an actual cave ceiling to it. I know it's really high up, and it would be really difficult to do something like that with Caradet, where it's this enclosed, you know, crypt-like cave. But I don't know. I feel like they could get creative with it and come up with something that would actually feel like there's a ceiling to the area with the skybox.
Yeah. So when you get to Stormguard, it feels small, but from these pictures here, you can just see how wide and expansive it is. And for those who are not aware, and this little bit spoilers right ahead, so if you don't want to hear exactly how you get around at Stormguard, mute for the next 30 seconds or so. What happens is that you build a flight suit and your character can fly between the islands. Which makes sense when you consider this is where the Aviancies had their base back in the day, Armadil and whatnot.
This is the Armadil update we've been waiting for.
Yeah. This is paving the way for the Big Bird quest. And, you know, you can't see it in these pictures, but there's the wind. The wind. The trees move in the wind, which, to my knowledge, is something that hasn't been done before in game.
Void Knight Outpost.
Okay.
There are some trees that have wind there, but that's very limited. It's literally just the trees. Now, here in Stormguard, there's actually some wind movement in the ground foliage as well, in the plants and grass. That's pretty awesome, too. So it's not just the trees like we've had in other environments.
So do you think with this, they would have modeled these trees and foliage to move on their own, or are they actually using wind currents to move them?
I'd say they probably just animated the trees and objects themselves. That's not difficult to do.
Okay.
It'd probably be a little bit cheaper to do that as well, because you don't have to process the wind while the game is running.
Right. Because I know there are games out there that do this.
Yeah.
and you know, all these islands, various levels, and you know you'd think that having lots of islands to move to, that would be the primary method of movement, but there is still lots of movement up and down at Stormguard as well.
So how does the flying control? I haven't gotten to experience it all.
You put the wingsuit on your tool belt, and then you jump off a platform, and you just control, like, you control your character.
So by clicking. How do you control your height?
You don't. You can't move.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think I understand what you mean then.
So you land on a platform, and then to go up, you take the ladder or the rope. You can't go up and down when you're flying, unfortunately.
It's like it's got some sort of like nav mesh in the sky or something.
Yeah, and I mean everywhere you can go practically anywhere, except for over the land masses. Yeah.
So you basically have free reign to explore.
Oh yeah, you have free reign to explore. You can,
okay, that's really cool.
You can
that's
explore
really cool.
The land masses by foot, or you can explore anything else that isn't a land mass with the wingsuit.
Now, can you just like get out of the air and land somewhere? Anyway?
No, you can only land on specific platforms.
Okay.
And they're detailed on the map with the red.
That's still really cool. That's a degree of exploration we've never had in this game.
Yeah, and you know,
like that's, oh my gosh, look at that shot.
Yeah, this is one of those top-down views.
Wow.
So this is obviously a high point, and then the other ones that we're seeing around here are the other, I guess you could say, platforms, or I don't know what you would call those.
Hell with my plans for the night. I want to train just to see this. This is so pretty. Like, I'm learning all these things about the flying, and now I'm actually just wanting to play it myself. Then, I got 20 levels to go.
Yeah, it'll go quick.
I've heard the 50s can be grueling.
Yeah, the 50s and 60s are. More so the 60s than the 50s. Here's where you come in at Everlight, and then after that you can move between the various platforms. You know, they're marked as agility shortcuts on the map, but you use your boots of flight, which you get when excavating inside. Then there's numerous points where you can jump down and go back to the main surface world.
I'm getting some massive City in the Sky vibes from Zelda Twilight Princess, okay. If anybody's ever played that.
Tanis, you ever played that?
Have not. Right.
There's got to be someone listening who's played
definitely.
It.
We got communities that cross all boundaries like this. That's it. That's all we got for Stormguard photos. And I know, Zant, you're probably the most interested in these ones. And, you know, we really can't explore too much on these based on the photos. But it is a lot more expansive than these photos show.
I'm salivating.
All right. Next up, let's move on to Warforge, which opens at level 76. And I have some concerns about the initial areas at Warforge. It feels really claustrophobic. As we've been doing, we'll start with Alex's bits. Here's the top piece. This, of course, is where mobilizing armies used to be. You access it by the archaeology teleport table or the spirit tree.
That's great that location is getting some use again.
And then, voila, this is the first room inside Stormguard. And I find this really claustrophobic.
Yeah, it's what I'd expect in a way, though.
Yeah, because it's so hard to find a camera angle in here that doesn't clip.
And, yeah, I haven't gotten to explore this at all
yet. And lets you be able to see the dig sites, which are down below here at this central circular area next to the minecart, which you can see right here where you dump your equipment or you dump your materials.
It's hard to
off
even
it.
Tell how big this space right? is just from this picture.
Because there is no person here. We'll go through some of the other concept art that I had on that after.
I'm assuming this is quite big.
Yeah, Warforge
is. It just
huge.
Looks so busy.
Right.
I mean, it is.
It's very busy.
It's the place I've had the most trouble until I learned that I could just like click on the mini map and it would get me around way easier than trying to spin my camera.
Yeah, and you know,
being a Bandos location though, it's kind of what I'd expect.
Right, and that makes sense. Chaos.
Yeah.
The goblin tunnels, and you know, I haven't gone further in, but you can tell it kind of opens up beyond that first screenshot, so that's good.
Well, and I don't know what's beyond that barrier. I think it's going to open up into an easier area to navigate, but I haven't made it that far yet.
I feel like this is generally the one of the dig sites that hasn't excited many people as much as the other ones. It's neat, but it doesn't have anything special to it. It seems
like it looks good in terms of,
unless I'm not understanding the significance of the location or something.
Well, the significance of it was lore wise that this was Bandos's training camp, and it was a miracle if you came out of this alive, if you're one of his followers. And when the war ended, they sealed the entrance in and left everybody who was inside to die.
Wow.
So that's the significance of this one lore-wise.
Well, now I really don't want to go in there.
And, you know, these ones are very tight, and it's a lot like Curadet. Lots of detail on the walls and whatnot, but no skybox on this one because I'm betting that it's inside, as you can see here. And, you know, starting at level 76, that's relatively high leveled. And, yeah, you know, chaos, busyness.
They just about nailed that.
Yeah, the Crucible, as it's called, that's the first area.
It's really impressive visually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's very busy. I can imagine it's probably quite hard to navigate.
Yeah,
I don't even really know what I'm looking at here. Like, what parts can we walk on? I don't know the area at all, so it's hard to make a judgment about that right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how the water effects work and how that all works, because the water is green. I don't want to know why it's green, but
goblins,
it's all there. Truly immaculate on what we see here.
Oh, I really do like those mushrooms they have scattered around, though. Those are really interesting looking.
Yeah. And, you know, you got to keep
in mind unique.
That each one of these are their own little asset, probably.
Yeah, those are very pretty.
So, tons of work went into this.
And I do have to say, with all of the stuff we've seen in this update so far, everything has a cohesive style to it.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can tell it's Bandos. You can tell it's Ceridoman with Everlight and so on.
Yeah, and even going a step beyond each individual dig site themselves, if we're talking about the archaeology update as a whole, it has a cohesive art style to it. And that's something that I wish RuneScape would focus on a little bit more. I know that's hard to do with, you know, all of the old stuff we still have in the
game. With every little update being ad hoc.
Yeah, but over the past, like, 4 or 5 years, it feels like, you know, every 7, 8 months, we start getting different styled art assets with these different updates, and things just start looking different. And there's so many questions I have about it, but this is an update that looks very cohesive, and it even fits within the same style of, you know, other massive updates we've seen recently, like Anachronia.
Yeah, and you know, it's a central DNA to RS, which is good.
It's like RuneScape is actually developing its true 2020 image. Like, this is what RuneScape looks like.
Yeah, and I've been saying that since the needle skips, they need to go on, you know, an advertising campaign. This is RuneScape 3.
And that's one other thing I was wanting to mention about the trees when we were in Stormguard. Those new trees, I really do hope they implement those around the world and, you know, update assets where they can. But I feel like those trees are almost an iteration of the old trees we had before, the ones that are scattered around the world now.
Right.
Like, they look a little bit different, but I see the resemblance there.
Okay.
But they're to a more proper scale, and yeah. I would be really interested to see what those would be like around the game world.
Yeah, because, you know, we've had numerous trees, and if anybody actually wants to go see the old trees that RS2 launched with, I think there's still a few of them that you could find on the port in Karamja when you
there's take a the boat from Port Sarah. Are the ones in Zanaris the old ones, too?
I think that area's been updated more than once. So
bummer.
No. I do have some concept art that was sent in the archaeology package that Jagex sent with us that wasn't shown here. Some concept art of all of the Bandos dig site projects at the Crucible. We'll know what some of these are, like the Orc Cleaver Sword, the Rekishin War Tether, the Nergoshian Ball, and so on. Nazarog, the Beast Helmet. Then here's some actual Bandos dig site concept art for the Goblin Tunnels. And here you can see, for people watching on video, the player perspective on this one is really tiny. And that's what they aim to show with this, is just how tiny and what the scale is on this. And cave fishing spots, that's what the water is used for down there.
And a lot of the images for the Warforge, there was this really big, like, green glow to the background. I wish they had that in the game.
Yeah. And here we are. Crucible for when you first enter the Warforge dig site.
Yeah, I believe that's the one I was talking about.
It shows exactly the scale that your character is at. And, you know, with that, you can see just how tiny he or she is. And you move your way down to the bottom, and that's where you begin your work at Warforge. The throne of Bandos, once again, huge compared to the player. And, you know, I think it's important to include how big the player is in all of these, because if you don't, then you really don't get a good idea of what they're aiming for with them.
Agreed.
Let's see. I can move on to some more of these in terms of this for people watching on video. I realize Tannis and Zant, you guys can't see this anymore because I changed windows, but people watching on the video can. What do we got for Stormguard? We got some fun little paintings of what Stormguard looks like from general concept art. And, you know, this almost looks like a watercolor to a degree. Let me share this with you guys here in Discord.
I've got,
so you can pick that.
I love seeing these there. Early concept art.
Yeah. And, you know, it just looks like watercolor, doesn't it?
Yeah. And this really helps you understand the progression of this from the idea of this environment from the start to actually like fully producing it.
Songbird recorders, Aileron toys. I don't know why they'd call that a toy. Keshik drum.
Maybe it's like a little hand glider thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You can throw.
Multivision scope. And, you know, these are the kind of things that you find at Stormguard. Lots of technology. And it makes sense. That's why why Ancient Invention is unlocked there. Prototype god swords. Prototype Ooh. God staves. Prototype god bows. You could tell that maybe that was a direction they were going to go instead of the Inquisitor's staff and Spear of Annihilation, maybe some kind of ancient prototype god weapons.
A true god bow, not the ones from Treasure Trails.
Nope. materials from Stormguard, Stormguard steel, Armadillion, yellow vellum, Orthon glass, Wings of War. The floating portals and how they work compared to the land portals. Stormguard Watchtower with scale for players. And you can definitely see that in terms of the drawing that was done with this, it was done by hand. And this is, you know, in general, how concept artists work in this industry. Then if we flip on over to Everlight, we got six documents for that, including the projects from the various shields that you'll find, the short bow, the Kopesh, then all the different Everlight projects that you can excavate, the art behind those, the decorative vases there, people recognize the bowl, the torch, and, you know, just the amount of detail that are in these and the actual objects in your inventory. Now you can kind of get a picture of what you had. Archaeologist outfits. I don't know why I put that one in that folder, but that's okay. And then the Everlight beacon itself on there is nice as well in terms of just showing what you see at the top of the tower. And then finally, a nice little painting again of what Everlight would have looked like back in the day, I guess, before it was abandoned. Which
I absolutely love that picture. That's really neat to see.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
You know, it's an entirely different time because the sky is blue. That's something that you don't see in the area to the east. I got my directions confused there, to the east in Mauritania in this day and age, which, you know, this signifies a completely different time. The Icene statues, which, you know, if you actually go there, you can see all these. You can restore these statues as well. So, truly amazing work that we've seen in all these dig sites. And I guess now this is the time to ask Zant and Tanis, based on this, just, you know, we got a couple more here for the Infernal Source, which, you know, I think the Infernal Source is one that, you know, many people don't really appreciate that much. But when you look at this concept art here, you can just see how expansive this was, you know, initially designed to be. And what we got at the end of this is pretty close to what we have here. And you can see these pathways for the player to walk on. All the Infernal Source demons and animals that were there for ancient summoning, of course. So now the question for you guys, which of these is your favorite dig site based purely from the art? Let Tanis go first, because I know Zant's probably already got a decision made on that, but Tanis, you can go first.
Purely from the art, probably Everlight. That last picture was really, really cool, and I hate vampires even more now. They really suck.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
All right, Zant?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for me, it's hard to decide between Everlight and Stormguard, because for me personally, it's really cool to see in Everlight actually getting to see some of the Ceridoman architecture, and an environment just is completely in that setting. It's really nice, and it's gorgeous. It looks great. The lighting is very appropriate. But Stormguard, it's just... Stormguard really shows off what RuneScape can do, I feel, technically. And it's really impressive. It's like next-gen RuneScape. It's so far beyond what I ever expected to see from this skill. And the flying itself is really neat, too. And that's something I almost didn't even know about until
until today.
Well, I knew about it, but I didn't understand the depth of it.
All right.
But that area is gorgeous looking. The wind, the new trees, the lighting, and you can even see the surface below you. You know, it's clear that they put that environment through its paces, and they thought about it, and they nailed it.
All right.
And it's the Armadyl environment I've been dreaming of.
Yeah, now all we need is a quest set somewhere like this, right?
Yes, please.
All right, I'm going to go with Everlight. You know, just, you know, I think it just shows the depth from what we can see in terms of both the surface level when you first get there, then how expansive it is from a far out angle, and then when you go all the way to the very bottom into the caves, then underwater, then to the top of a lighthouse, just the amount of verticality in it. Granted, yeah, we still have that with Stormguard. I just think that this shows off what the engine is capable of. It just looks so great with depth of field too. So
I also love how with Everlight, that it's actually like an extension of the game map. They actually added some new land.
Yeah,
I love when they do that.
Yeah,
it's
because
great.
That's the only really one nice that really did that, because all the other ones are, you know, kind of in their own areas, you know, either underground like Warforged and Infernal Source are. Caridet is in its own area, kind of, except you still underground, whereas Everlight actually expands the map, so that's good.
Yeah, it's very neat in that way. But I wouldn't be surprised if I start to become way more fond of Everlight once I actually get to explore the underwater areas or underground areas and go to the top.
Yeah, I want to keep training.
Really on with it. I think I'm at the second spot.
All right. Well, you know, as I mentioned, we talked about the art, but there was the making of archaeology live stream this week with mods Porky, Iago, Ryan, Timbo, and Rolly. Porky, Iago, and Ryan were on video with this, and they went through a bit of a brief run through of what exactly was talked about and how the design process for archaeology went. So I'm just going to run through some of this. Please do feel free to stop me either if you want to discuss any of these points here. The initial inception was January of 2018. I wrote the article about the 5 steps to harmony in April of 2018. And, you know, almost 2 years later, we see the results of that. And as I mentioned earlier, kind of prophetic in that sense that, you know, they managed to pull off a huge update that was really not asked for by the players, but players do enjoy. Kimbo was tasked by Maude Osborne and the leadership team to come up with a new skill that would have initially been launched in the summer of 2019. And one thing I think where this started off on the right foot is that it was actually Maude Timbo who wanted to do a proper validation process for this skill. As in, factor in, what does the community want? What does the dev team want? What does the business side of Jagex want? And ultimately, what's good for the game? And he says this wasn't really done well before, and previously a skill was made that a designer or developer came up with that they thought was cool, and you know, examples of this was summoning and divination, and they wanted to try and find the best skill to come up with. And you know, this is from the design process of what Maude Warden did when he said, let's take some extra time and do the longevity testing and just add a bit of polish to it. What they did with archaeology, both from the design sense and the release sense, is they did things they never did before, and they gave it time, and they did what was best for the game. And that's what I want everybody to take away from this.
You mean they used the like lead balancer to decide
yes.
the best way to go forward and what the game needed for a skill?
Yes.
Huh. Well, that seemed to work out pretty well. Can we do that again?
Right? That's what we said. Bottle this whole thing up and use this as the process going forward.
Yeah, exactly.
He started by asking everyone at Jagex for ideas. And, you know, this wasn't limited to the RuneScape team. It was the old school team as well, the business side of it, HR, and even the people who are working on their unannounced title. The only constraint was that it had to fit within the world. The short list at the end of it was archaeology, sailing, spellcrafting, which is something Sirion was very interested in, animal training, necromancy, and merchanting. Archaeology was not a top skill after a 4-hour meeting at a nearby pub where everybody who was the noted champion for each skill, they pitched their ideas to the other designers. Necromancy was ultimately disregarded from a design point of view because it sat too close to summoning, prayer, and magic. And it was clear from the outset that they were designing a standard skill and not an elite skill. And that's why necromancy was disregarded, even though it was the thing in the surveys that came in at the top with what sounded most interesting to the players.
The surface, that does kind of sound more interesting than archaeology.
And see that's the thing. If you would have went with that, we would have had necromancy at this point in time instead as an elite skill, which I don't know how I would have felt about that, leaning in on summoning, prayer, and magic.
I just don't see how that would be different from summoning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's more of an extension
summoning
to summoning
except
than anything
things that
else.
Are dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's more like, I don't know. It's just not much different.
Yeah. So with archaeology and sailing being the final two, the data ultimately kept saying that necromancy or spellcrafting would have been received better by the players. And when it came to the marketing team, they didn't like archaeology because archaeology was a bad word to them. They thought it would be dusty and dull. So from that point forward, they started pitching archaeology as something that was fantastical. It would be something where you could have one dig site in hell, the Infernal Source, and another one up in the sky, Stormguard. And what they did to show this off, when they started off prototyping the core loop of the skill, they showed the entire scope of the skill in 20 minutes so that someone who had a 20-minute play session could play through it and get a sense of if they liked the skill or not. And that's where they started out. And that's why I think we got this core loop in archaeology that everybody's enjoying, because they got that part right, and that's what Sirion has said time and time again.
What? Who has never, like, watched Indiana Jones? Or did they just not make that connection?
as to a way to make archaeology not boring?
Well, he's an archaeologist, yeah. So there was a time period when that's the Wild West.
Right.
I mean, and, hello.
And everybody thought that, that just hearing the name archaeology would sound dusty and dull, but...
yeah, well...
And that's what happens when you give too much sway to the marketing team, right?
Yeah.
So... another possibility was lost areas. They would use random generation, like dungeoneering, to build areas for what the spaces could be. The end result wouldn't be randomly generated for the players, but they would have used this random generation in building it. That didn't make its way into the final design, of course, but it was something they thought of. Let's see. They had the idea to do the collection log in early 2019. And, you know, I think we can all appreciate that they actually did that, because without the collection log, we wouldn't have much to do beyond leveling up, right? It wouldn't give us direction. Now, here's another one. Relics were initially only going to be small, medium, and large, and you could only have one of each, and it would be quite restrictive. And they wanted to take that restriction away, and now that's where we got the current monolith power model that we have in game right now. Which I think the way we have it now is much better.
Yeah, I do too. I'm sure that was some kind of concern of, might be overpowered. But I think they saw what could happen, like when you, this is kind of, you know, an extension of invention machines and like how you run those, and that works, so we can do a similar with the monolith.
Yeah.
If they would have just left it small, medium, large, I feel like that would have left a lot of room for there to eventually be just like set combinations that are kind of like crutches that everyone uses. So,
and that's boring.
It would eliminate choice.
Yeah, it's a lot less variety. If you just know what the best combo is.
They also had some video of one of the early prototypes of whatever like could have looked like before they, you know, brought in all the unique textures and the unique map environments on this, what the top of the tower would have looked like. The fact there would have been a top tower on that. They also had some early previews for the Infernal Source in terms of white boxing as well, and how that turned out to be very close to the final design that they brought forward. So... lots of fun little things here and there on that. Here's another fun one. Early on in the process, the artifact would have had to have been prepared. Then it would have had to have been assembled. Then it would have had to have been finished. So there would have been three steps to restoring an artifact compared to the one that we have today.
Yeah, that's a little much.
And, you know, there are times where simplicity is the best policy, and that's what we got.
Exactly.
Then there were some more early white boxing concepts showing what the Archaeology Guild would look like, what Everlight would look like, and how they took those and they effectively added onto the terrain and then customized the terrain. After that, and I realized, Zant, I didn't actually show the concept art of the Archaeology Guild because there were some fun ones there. We'll go there after we do that. And they found that, as I mentioned during longevity testing, that it was unnecessary to have shortcuts or ladders to climb down when, you know, you could have just modified the path and had the players walk down instead. And this was, you know, just effectively smoothing things over as they built out the skill. Then
wasn't the first place they started doing that? The abbey that's kind of near Caradats. That was one of the first places I think that they actually put the stairs that go up instead of
right.
You know, actual stairs that you click on.
Yeah, that was many years
ago. It changes
ago.
Level. So it's kind of neat how it's near an archaeology location.
Then they have some screenshots of their huge testing square, which has all the objects, all the material caches and whatnot. And they said, yeah, we have to make sure that, you know, this wouldn't be somewhere that would be inadvertently player accessible, because you'd be able to cheat the skill with that if you were able to take from there, but they showed what that looked like and what they did for testing before they cleaned it up and got rid of it. So, all right. That's really all I took from the live stream. Anything else you guys had from there, questions or otherwise?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. It was a fun live stream, and I realized we kind of preempted them on the art one there, but they did say that they could do an art live stream in the future as well if they wanted to. So we'll definitely be keeping our eyes open for that. So,
well, hopefully they want to.
Yeah, because they definitely should, because, I mean...
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we're here showing this off, and, I mean, hell, they... probably want to show that off too on stream. But here's the Archaeology Guild, as I mentioned, for people watching on the video version, number of screenshots and, you know, just showing off all the various aspects of it. Zant, I don't know if there's anything that you want to specifically bring up here on this based on the screenshots.
This did change quite a bit from the original update that they did for Anachronia with this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought the area does seem a bit more, I don't know, open now.
Yeah. One thing they actually said is that this little door in the bottom right of this screenshot here, they rotated 180 degrees because the way it was set up before, people thought it was part of the tutorial. So they had people going down into the empty throne room in the tutorial and getting lost for the skill.
I guess the throne room just... decided it was going to rotate 100 degrees underground too.
Yeah.
So,
fun little thing here with the monolith, which I got a statue of a few weeks back. Go back in the show notes for that. And you know, just the art that we had for the dig sites continued at the Archaeology Guild as well, and it's truly amazing. Truly amazing.
I used to actually think seeing the Broken Home area. In this area and kind of the Lumbridge, not Lumbridge, Varrock, the Lumberyard area, some lumber word. I always thought that seeing the Broken Home area from that vicinity was always kind of cluttered looking, but I don't know. This area kind of complements the Archaeology Guild.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense, you know, seeing that.
Yeah, it's kind of a happy accident, I guess.
Yeah, it looks even better if you turn depth of field on.
Yeah, exactly. I think that just kind of makes most things at distance look a little bit more natural.
Yeah. All righty. So that was lots of stuff on archaeology and the making of archaeology and art. We do also have a little thing here detailing the drop event that they're going to be running. Oh, that's the wrong link. I put the wrong link in the show notes for that. We'll fix that after. But the right link is now... in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com for anybody who wants to see it. But Jagex is going to be donating 100,000 plus pounds for mental health charity. And of course, they say in this post that life is that extra bit challenging for everyone at the moment, and isolation is proving a particular struggle for those impacted by mental health issues. So as with this, they'll be running with their partners CPSL Mind, the Prince's Trust, and Rise Above the Disorder. And as revealed by Mod Pips earlier in the month, they are going to be donating an additional 100,000 pounds to these partners. And what they're going to be doing with this is, with this, running the drop event from April 27th until May 3rd. Players will be shown a succession of questions. Each one is going to have four multiple choice answers. And if you answer right, you go on to the next question. If not, you're thrown into the drop. There's 12 questions in total, and for every player who takes on the drop one or more times, Jagex will donate 1 pound to their charity partners for a maximum of 34,500 pounds. So I guess the question is, can you get enough runs of the drop-in game to have 34,500 people run and donate, or rather run the drop, so that they will donate to their mental health charity partners on this? And they say you can confront the drop as many times as you like, and if you answer all 12 questions successfully, you'll get a new title, some lamps, and some stars. And this doesn't, of course, take away from the fact that they'll be running Mental Health Awareness Week on May 18th through the 24th as well, as they do each and every year. And they point things back to check out the recent post, which we talked about, I think it was 2 weeks ago, from Mod Pips, which talks about the things that Jagex are up to in this uncertain time that we all live in. So be sure to take part in the drop starting on April 27th. There we go.
How do we join that, Shane?
I don't know. I'm betting there's going to be a quick teleport in the events menu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, failing that, it will be at Berthorpe.
Okay. Well, hopefully we can get it straight.
Yeah.
Straight teleport.
Yeah, because like I mean, for something like that, you definitely want to provide that, right? And it is a community event.
Yeah, well, you want to make it, I mean, if you want as many people to do it as possible.
You got to get people there and make it low friction. Alrighty, we do have a listener question this week, so we'll get to that. But first, I'll just take a moment to remind our listeners about our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/rsbnb. And there you can figure out how to support the podcast monetarily if you so choose to. So for as little as $1 a month, you get a special mention in our show notes, early access to them, and of course you help fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBnb Update. For $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the podcast. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and get exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, just head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb, whether it be the monthly bit, the clips, or that entire back catalog of monthly bits, Inside Update, which we post at the end of each month, the round table, which I think we're going to do probably in early May this month, kind of tied into Double XP weekend. I think that's the way we're going to do this one. We'll just do one around Double XP weekend, slot that in, because our maybe make it an Archaeology Double XP weekend theme. But watch the Patreon feed to learn more about that. And I believe you, Tannis, have an announcement for us in relation to April Movie Night happening next Monday, the 27th.
Yeah, after careful deliberation with others, I'm going with Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, Episode 1. It's about a week before Star Wars Day, so we can kick it off with The Phantom Menace. But, you know, I started, gosh, it was probably like, what, 2011, 10, somewhere around there. I started listening to the show, and you couldn't go 10 minutes in without Shane doing a Star Trek reference. And I just thought, as fun as some of these other movies would be, I cannot pass a chance to have Shane watch Star Wars. I can't. I mean, this is my one chance to make it happen. And so, yeah, come join us. We'll kick off. I'm going to be watching like a movie every day until we make it to May the 4th. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to join us in for this, you do have to become a Patreon supporter. So that's another thing you gain for as little as $1 a month. If you want to come watch the first prequel, it's called, right?
Yes.
The first prequel on Monday, as you're hearing this. I realize it's a little bit late notice hearing that, but it's all posted on the Patreon website for people even before we're recording this. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. And, you know, if you want to join, come along. Little as $1 a month. See what you get with that. You get movie night. You get the entire back catalog of monthly bits. Come along. Stay for a while, and maybe we'll make some new friends with this. So patreon.com/rsbnb. And, you know, with this, we also have to thank our wonderful Patreon supporters this week. And, you know, we couldn't do this without them. We wouldn't be at this point doing movie night for a second month in a row without them, wouldn't we, Tannis? So this week, I'd like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H, K Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S, Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, Nora, Our Memories, Rastafa, Ripeth, Sam W, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. So thanks so much, everyone, for your support. And
thanks, guys.
Onwards we go to a second movie night and hopefully a third and more.
I know I can't. I can't wait. Can't wait.
All right. So our question this week is from Sunset Fish. Should Jagex go ahead and make every skill a true 120, since that's what they seem to like? Should more dedication be henceforth be given in addition to content for all 28 skills now? Can you think of additional content for being added to skills such as agility? Ooh, this is a tough one, isn't it?
I don't know, not really. Yes.
Okay. I have a feeling you want to take the easy answer here.
What's the easy answer?
The easy answer is that it's a no, and they should only add 120s if there's content to add on top of it.
No, that would be your answer. That's definitely not my answer.
Okay. What's your answer?
Absolutely, but I want them to strip each skill out individually and give it the archaeology treatment. I want it reworked, remolded.
That could take time.
Well, if you want something done right, can't rush it.
Yeah.
He said, should they go to 120? No, I don't think you should just tack on necessarily. It didn't always. I mean, okay. So it worked out pretty well with Herblore and farming, but it didn't work out that well with Slayer. So kind of got a mixed bag there. But it seems like they do pretty well when you start from scratch and build it to 120, which is why. I mean, think about this. Like, you could have a renaissance, and every single skill could have an economy that worked like archaeology did. Like, and we know it's not going to last forever, but what if you had that, you know, a couple times a year where the economy just worked really well for everybody? It would be great.
What do you think, Zan?
I don't know. I feel like I'm somewhere in between. I feel like it'd be nice to have 120s across the board, but I feel like certain skills, like agility being the example, I feel like I don't see how that would even work. Who would want to train that to 120? What they could even add to that to make it interesting to 120? But I don't know. I do think from here on out, all new skills should go to 120. Like, I feel like that should be a thing. But as far as updating all existing ones to 120, I don't know. It's too hard to tell. I feel like certain ones would benefit from it more than others. Certain ones definitely wouldn't benefit that much, and the rest are just kind of in between.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys based expanding on this. Let's rephrase the question. If you were building RuneScape from scratch today, would you add an agility skill? Would you add a thieving skill? Would you add a slayer skill? And I think the answer is, if you wouldn't add it, should it even go to 120?
Yeah, I would definitely have. I mean, I think slayer is pretty safe. Agility, and see, here's the thing, Shane. At one point, agility served a small, tiny little bit of a purpose.
Run energy.
That's just been, you know, diluted.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a relic that lets you run infinitely now.
Right. But, like, I do totally agree with every new skill that comes out, definitely should follow this same model and go to 120.
Yeah.
Like, that's without question.
And I was kind of under the impression that 120 skills equals elite skill.
No.
You know, Advention onward. Like, at a certain point, I was under that impression, but archaeology kind of just proved that wrong.
Yeah. The elite skill definition is an interesting one. It has a different XP curve. It also relies on skills to unlock it, which, you know, looking back at invention, was divination, crafting, and smithing.
And it's a bad XP curve.
Yeah.
But I do understand there was a bit of discrepancy when archaeology was revealed to not be an elite skill. People were kind of questioning it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I understand where Jags is coming from. I think it makes sense where it is.
And they prove that they can put out a skill that doesn't feel grindy using the classic XP curve. So there was no reason for the invention curve.
And even at that, it's a pretty slow to train skill, too.
The invention curve felt twice as grindy. I mean, it helped for the 120, but it was absolute hell for the 99. Like, I don't think it made any difference. Like, the way RuneScape works really well, and you can see this in archaeology, is pre-99, it's kind of one way. When you get post-99, that's when you're starting to get into the big XP. And then if it's a 120 skill, past 120 is, like, the maximum. And that's, like, the best rates. And it just it works way better like that than having some, like, wasn't it like 80 mil gave you 120 for that? It's all weird.
It's out of whack.
It's out of whack, yeah.
The skills I would take to 120 today, if it was up to me, would be fletching, crafting, and probably smithing. The ones related to the combat types.
If you do smithing and crafting, you have to do rune crafting.
If you do smithing, you can't. I mean, can you do that without mining?
But I feel like there needs to be just a general reshuffle of, like, what skills craft which armor for each style and how that all works. Yeah.
So at that point, then you're looking at taking mining, smithing, woodcutting, fletching, crafting, rune crafting.
So everything.
To 120, and what you're left with are the combat skills, thieving, agility, fire making, fishing, cooking.
With the exception of fishing and cooking, you probably drop the rest, and it wouldn't bother me a bit.
Right, I mean, and we're saying that if you're making RuneScape over again, obviously no one here is suggesting that you should get rid of agility or thieving.
Well, I might suggest get rid of agility.
Yeah, same. I swear, I've probably trained more agility with the boots than I have actually training agility.
Yeah, that was
right, and see, that's the thing. I mean, how would you take that to 120? Safe cracking should have been the post 99 thieving, and I'm still happy that I managed to ask Mod Osborne about when they're going to nerf that.
Oh, well, never. Hopefully, but
I didn't even
it would have been. It would have been fine. A post 120, or I mean, a post 99.
Yeah,
I was like completely oblivious to safe cracking when I was going for 99 thieving because it was right when I started playing again, and I kind of didn't know it existed.
It's the new thieving hot sauce.
I just did Prif because I wanted the clues anyways, so that was kind of nice.
Yeah, Prif was nice. Safecracking's nice. I can't imagine. I didn't get mine until Prif.
I still remember the story when safecracking came out. The blind man taught Sirion and myself about clicking when the save flashes.
Yeah, that's funny. That had to be a product of being zoomed in so close to see it. I'm like, what? Do you guys just sit there? What? I don't know.
But, you know, my general sense is that if you're going to take an existing skill to 120, do it the way you did farming and Herblore, because that made a lot of sense. There was content all the way, and it was different than what we had previously. And if you can do it that way, then you have my full blessing to take any skill to 120.
Right. Well, and and look at it, I mean, maybe not quite so much on the herbivore side, but definitely on the farming side, you kind of had that core loop that Theron talks about. So you can expand if you have that core to it.
Yeah, and, some of and these, the economy.
Yeah, right.
And see, you would need to do reworks of crafting and fletching and maybe even runecrafting to make that same kind of feeling happen. Because what is the use of crafting and fletching right now?
To make your crystal-matic?
Right.
So you got to go and beyond that, for a while.
But criminal bolts, maybe?
Well, yeah. A little bit on the ammunition side, but nothing major, right?
Are those used?
Oh, yeah, they're used.
Yeah, because I figured they had that, the effect update.
I think if you make every production skill feel like mining smithing, that's good. You make other ones feel like farming herbivore, that's good. And use those as a blueprint with the design process used for archaeology, and you can't fail.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, but as for additional content for a skill such as agility, I got nothing on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what an agility rework would look like.
Unless training agility, I don't know. Maybe they can make it so training agility literally happens as you like run around or something. I don't know. Just give you silver hawks.
Yeah.
By default, and that's your agility training. Yeah, let's just go back in time to the beginning of RuneScape and rewrite that.
And you know what the funny part is on this is Alex actually wrote about remembering the launch of agility.
Oh my gosh.
Because he was back then. He was around back then.
Wow. What year was that?
Before 2003.
The first year? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking. Like,
agility, thieving, and herb law, as it was called, in addition to fletching.
Herb law.
They added those.
Oh my gosh.
February 2002 with members.
Wow. I think the first time I ever touched the game was late 05.
Yeah. And, you know, agility's been around for that long, and it's been the same thing since. It was based on run energy, and at this point, I don't know. I will give an award to whoever can come up with something for agility. And maybe that's something a monthly bit can do, because that would be a real head-scratcher.
Yeah. We need the in-house developer on that.
No, not even that. I mean, get some of your friends involved with that too. The insane XP friends.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's put that up for one of the monthly bits. Eventually, a redesigned agility skill. Let's truly bend over backwards and do the impossible.
That's pretty impossible.
And we'll even come up with concept art and whiteboards.
Okay. I don't draw, Shane.
Sirion
does. I don't either.
Okay.
He can do the whiteboards. I said concept art, right? Oh.
Yeah.
If anyone knows an artist who can do concept art, sign up.
All right.
I guess I could technically make a little environment and call it concept art. Slap a little filter over that makes it look like somebody actually drew it.
There we have it. But
there's our little team.
Yeah, off the beaten path. But Tannis says, yes, I say you should only add skills to 120 if you can fill them with content. And Zant is in the middle, and we have nothing for agility.
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
If you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com. Leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb, or you can visit update.rsbnb.com/ask each week to find a questions thread to leave your questions. All right, so moving on into tech news. This week, there is a major vulnerability for people who play either Counter-Strike Global Offensive or Team Fortress 2. Old 2017 source code for both these games leaked online on the website 4chan, and because of this, it caused a panic in the game's online community, with people saying that it was possible for people who are even playing on a server to get hacked and have their computers taken over because of this. It has been since said by official sources at Valve, the people who make these games, that we have not found any reason for players to be alarmed or avoid the current game builds with this. And as always, playing on official servers is recommended for the greatest security. And with this, Valve wants people to, who are, might be looking into this, to report any tips about who might be behind this leak to the Valve security page. And, you know, this is just something to keep in mind that, you know, it is 2020. Leaks like this happen for two of the biggest video games out there, Counter-Strike Global Offensive and Team Fortress 2. And, you know, if the source code was leaked, it could potentially allow people to create vulnerabilities for these games out there. And, you know, we've long said here that sometimes when you're playing online, it's best to, you know, just stick to servers that are known good. And there is a series of official servers run by the game developers for both of these games for people who do want to play safely. That's the general good motto with this, is that play safely, play on the official Valve servers, and you should be fine. But, you know, with that being said, there is the possibility for vulnerabilities to develop at some point in the future. And I'd also just like to take this note that I just got an advert on ZDNet for archaeology in RuneScape. So they are so they are running ads on the internet for the new skill. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's and good to hear.
And at the same time, after that, they're also running an ad for Old School. So, in the same ad unit. But, anyways, if you play either Counter-Strike Global Offensive or Team Fortress 2, just take an extra level of care at this point in time. Make sure your games are still up to date. And probably for the time being, only play on servers that are known good. All right. Next up, Epic Games finally put Fortnite on the Google Play Store.
Okay.
And you're probably wondering why this is a big deal. It's because Epic did not like the Google Play Store monetization model. So ever since Fortnite became a hit, however many years ago that was, Epic has gone around the Google Play Store and asked users to download the app directly from their website and sideload it onto their Android device in order to cut Google out of the revenue model for this. Because just like Apple, Google takes a cut of in-app purchases made on the Google Play Store, and that includes Fortnite. And we know how many people play Fortnite, right? A lot. So
it's kind of amazing to me that this just went on, given how many people play Fortnite.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think I want to say that it's probably a majority iOS game. I could be wrong on that, but sideloading apps onto Android has its own inherent security problem because you get phished and you download the wrong app, the APK as they're called. You have just given over control of your device to some malicious actor. And this is something that only Android can do and iOS cannot do. And it's just one of the many restrictions that Apple puts on the iOS operating system. And in relation to this, Epic says that Google puts software downloadable outside of Google Play at a disadvantage, and through technical and business measures such as scary and repetitive security pop-ups for downloaded and updated software, restrictive manufacturer and carrier agreements, Google Public Relations characterizes third-party software as malware, and new efforts such as Google Play Protect to outright block software obtained outside the Google Play Store. So, you know, Epic is basically saying with this is that, you know, our game was getting flagged as malware when people were installing it because that's one of the new protections that Android brought in recently. And because of this, they felt they had no reason but to launch Fortnite for the Android operating system on the Google Play Store. And, you know, they're not pleased about it, but this is the easiest way for, you know, to watch out for player security. And quite honestly, you have a responsibility to do that when I think we can all agree Fortnite players are some of the youngest gamers out there, right?
Right. But isn't it kind of bullshit of Google to get their hands in their microtransactions? I mean,
but it's the same thing Apple
free
does.
Game. Yeah, well, it's bullshit that Apple does it too. Like, you should, I get like charging to be on your storefront, but why is your hand in the cookie jar? What the hell did you do that has anything to do?
That's been the same thing as always. Apple takes 30% of revenue.
Right.
Google takes 30% of revenue. It's just what you sign up for when you go on one of these stores.
Well, then that's why they completely justified in sideloading. I mean, what the hell, dude? 30% of your of that?
Yep.
For what? For what? The privilege to be on your store?
Yeah.
Yep.
Piss on that.
Yeah, and that's what every app developer agrees to, and you know, even for people who,
because they have to.
And
right?
And people even make this decision to do this to be on the macOS App Store to give that same revenue to Apple for desktop Mac applications. There are people who agree to do that.
Well, you can do that when, I mean, what, you got two? So your iOS, you got one choice. Google, you got one choice?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, no wonder you can demand 30% of something you have nothing to do with.
It's because
how that works out.
Yeah, because there are no third-party app stores, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I would all be all up for competition on this. But, you know, we're in the area, or in the era, I guess, where monopolies just dominate, whether it be Apple, Google, or Facebook, or Twitter, depending on their sector. All right. Let's change to some news that's literally out of this world here.
Oh.
2011 was the last time that the United States launched a crew into orbit. Since then, the United States has been reliant on the Russians to change out crew members at the International Space Station. And now, for the first time since 2011, NASA and SpaceX are going to be partnering to launch astronauts to the space station at the end of May. 4:32 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on May 27th, they will launch from Launch Complex 39A. That's the same place where all the famous launches have happened in the past. It will send two crew members up on the what they're calling the Demo 2 mission. The specific duration for the mission is yet to be determined, but this will be the first launch from U.S. soil that is crewed since 2011. And they're sending up two veterans who previously flew on space shuttle missions, and they will become members of the International Space Station crew.
That's awesome. I want to know, though, like, who is controlling it on the ground? Like, is NASA in charge?
NASA is controlling it. SpaceX is providing the infrastructure, like the hardware.
Right. Okay. That was my question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a NASA mission with SpaceX hardware.
Okay.
Even the Falcon 9
awesome.
Rocket and the Dragon capsule. That's all SpaceX.
Okay. I saw. He works at SpaceX now. He's the next astronaut on Joe Rogan. Can't remember the guy's name, but it's really interesting, man. It's about time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello.
I mean, there was a program that was designed to limit the downtime to about 2 years, but that was canceled by the Obama administration. It was started by the Bush administration. And since then, it's just been a question of finding the right private contractor to build this. And then there were, as with most things space, there were delays and whatnot going forward with it. So it's been way, way too long for something like this to happen.
I think Boeing has one too, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. Boeing's been doing a lot with this as well. Apparently, this new capsule can stay in orbit for about 110 days. They don't know how long the mission duration for this will be. The operational Dragon spacecraft will be capable of staying in orbit on its own for at least 210 days as a NASA requirement if it had to.
Okay.
And once the mission concludes, the Dragon will undock automatically with two astronauts on board. It'll leave the space station, come back, and splash down just off Florida's coast. And it'll be picked up and returned to Cape Canaveral.
So
it's a reusable craft.
So it does. Okay. So it can make return trips.
Yeah. The capsule itself is reusable, but of course the rockets are the usual SpaceX ones that they can recycle and whatnot.
So it's just splashing down, though? It's just like Soyuz or something?
Yeah, exactly like that. They're going back to basics for this. They're not doing any of the old space shuttle kind of thing that would land like an airplane did. So, exciting news in this regard. And, you know, so many people have been waiting years for this, and it's about time.
About time.
All righty. Let's have a look at our skill of the month and see what exactly is going on with this. See if Brew has continued with his COVID trajectory on this. And most certainly he has. 157 million XP gained so far.
Oof.
Second is PK Mage with 58.2. Then Mr. Jingles with 54.9, Derp with 53.2, and Unknown Raptoid with 52.5. And then we got another one down at 48 million, Malinoric. So there's three distinct classes. There's the Brew class. There's the one immediately below Brew, people racing in the 50s and late 40s. And then we got the people in the tens of millions. Mm-hmm. Then we got you and me down at 21 and 22.
And then, yep.
That puts me at around level 80 or so. I've been averaging 84K XP a day.
Okay, yeah, I've pretty much been doing a lot of gathering.
So you're going to have a huge spike at the end?
I mean, I guess. I'm trying to get to the 81. Get beyond
okay
barrier.
Yeah. Well, this was a good skill month, and we'll definitely be doing another one in May. It's just a question of which ones it's going to be. I think we're going to do two shorter ones this time because these ones are long sprints, and people I've been talking to have said that the 10 to 14 day time range is a lot more comfortable.
Oh, for sure. But this was like, we could start at zero. This was a
once in a lifetime opportunity, really.
Yeah. All right.
For how rarely skills come out. And the fact it came out, on the first of a month, literally, helped too. So,
yeah. It's amazing seeing everyone on the leaderboard having start XP at zero.
Yep, and that's what we wanted.
Don't see that often.
All right, let's do some achievements this week. So, what do we got?
All right, we've got Parnassius with 99 Archaeology on the 22nd. Nafan with 99 Constitution on the 21st. The Lion with 99 Archaeology on the 21st as well. Malchior with 99 Slayer on the 20th. I Herblaw with 99 Archaeology on the 19th.
That's an Iron Man.
And Tim 2 with 99 Archaeology also on the 19th.
Next up, we have Holy Nicholas with 99 Farming on the 18th. Sorensen 57 with 99 Archaeology also on the 18th. Spartacus's, I guess, with 99 Defense on the 18th. The Firewatch with 120 Invention also on the 18th. Then on the 17th, we have One Rib with 99 Archaeology. Canard with 99 Archaeology as well. Dennis with 99 Archaeology. And Jaguar 007 also with 99 Archaeology also on the 17th.
Well, we're not done there, because we also have our very own Magic King with 99 Archaeology on April 17th. Then we have Rev City with 99 Cooking on April 17th. Silly Cat 98 with 99 Smithing April 17th. Stinky Pete 22 with 99 Magic on April 17th. K Matt May 22 with 99 Archaeology. And Lanakia with 99 Dungeoneering on April 16th.
Nicely done, everyone. And so many 99 archaeologies this week, too. That's nice to see.
Yeah. Almost a month for 99s to really, you know, start.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, the fact it's taken most of these people 3 weeks or so, I think that's a good rate. Granted, we did have a few last week in our community. We didn't have anyone truly hardcore getting it in the first week, so that's fine. But we did have some in the second week, which I think is to be expected. So overall, I'm pleased with the rate at which people got 99 in this skill.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Zant, you have a pick of the week for us. You were on the fence about which one you were going to pick, so what is it?
All right. I've got two I'm debating between, so can I do a small honorable mention?
Yes.
Because I just want to mention it. All right. So recently with my job I started about, I think, 4 months ago now, I've been doing a lot of VR development. So I've been getting to play with an Oculus Quest quite a bit. And one of the things that I decided to try out with this was Google Earth VR. And unfortunately, on the Quest, you need to use Oculus Link to do it. So basically, you need to plug it into your PC. But if you have a VR headset, try it out. It is so cool. It's literally the 3D version of the Google Earth that we have and know and love. But you get to view it in VR. And the controls for it are incredible. You just point and fly. And it feels like you're there. It really does. And they even have a mode where they change the way it handles scaling to actually feel like your actual human size versus the environments. It's just really neat. You get to explore and just explore the world in VR. And
so you're saying you could jump off a building and fly with this if you wanted to?
Yes. It's creepy. It's very cool. And, you know, it's the Google Maps scary level of detail that they have in 3D for the entirety of the planet. It's pretty insane.
How does that work with headaches and whatnot in perspective?
I think that depends on the headset you have and just, you know, how you respond to things like that. I know for some people it's more of an issue than others. For me personally, it's not that bad. But I do know, and we're getting a little bit sidetracked here, but there's a headset coming out sooner. It may already be out. The Valve Index has a much wider field of view inside the headset, and that's supposedly aimed, and actually, in addition to that, it's also a higher refresh rate. It's 120 hertz. So that's supposed to help with the motion sickness that you usually get from VR.
Okay.
I don't know how well that works because I haven't gotten to try it yet. But yeah, that, I feel like that's just going to get better with technology. As you know, the technology gets better, we're able to have, you know, higher resolution screens in these things and better GPUs to run them.
All right. And your honorable mention? Or was that the pick?
That was the honorable mention. Okay. That was a little long-winded, but consistent with the previous times I've been on this show, you know, I'm a big Nintendo fan, and 10 days before Archaeology launched, there was this magical game that came out for the Nintendo Switch called Animal Crossing New Horizons. So this is kind of, I don't want to call it a reboot, but it's the first Animal Crossing game we've had on an actual game console that's not a handheld only since the Wii. And that's been a long time. So this game takes this series and seriously modernizes a lot of things about it. And it's done it in such an amazing way. And if you don't know what Animal Crossing is about, it's essentially just a life simulator game. It's very basic. A good way to describe it, a lot of people say, is it's a game about doing nothing. You kind of just live in this peaceful life in this town that has these other little animal characters.
And I think that's what many people are after these days.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things about this game. Everyone was saying the timing of it was perfect.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those games that's like a true escape from reality into this other world. And the whole premise of it is that the game runs in real time on the actual clock that is on your system. So the actual first Animal Crossing game back on the N64, they actually had to use an expansion cartridge you put in the controller so you could actually keep track of time so they could do that. And that's just been a staple of the series. It's really jarring for some people, but it creates this sense of game. It creates this thing when you're playing the game that your satisfaction with it is delayed. You have things that you're going to do today that are going to actually have results tomorrow. And that sense of delayed satisfaction with this game is what keeps people coming back to it as like this daily routine. And It's honestly just a nice game to sit down and play.
You know, I've heard of people who had a Switch with this, a Switch that was shared amongst family members. One family member got the game, hasn't seen the Switch since.
Yeah, it's one of those games. And the special thing about it, too, is Animal Crossing, a game that allows you to be really creative with the way you design your little area. So I mentioned that in Animal Crossing, you're moving into a little town with these other villagers. Well, this game, New Horizons, you're actually moving into a deserted island. And you develop the island from nothing into a place where there's actually houses and a town hall, museum. And you go through the paces and build all that stuff yourself in real time, brick by brick. And it's a game that really emphasizes step-by-step progression and actually,
so it, you know, sounds, accomplishing it something. Sounds almost in a way like a more advanced, more evolved format of Minecraft.
Kind of. It's a very... It's been described to be a very zen kind of game.
Yeah.
And with the customization, you have a house. There's an entire catalog of furniture that you can customize. And some of the stuff is really pretty looking. And I must say about this game, it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, being the first Animal Crossing game that's HD on a console that can handle that degree of graphics. And also, I wanted to mention this with this. They made the decision to cap this game at 30 FPS. For the reason that it allows them to render this game in full 1080p, which is something that not a lot of Switch games do, believe it or not. So it's really crisp looking compared to other Nintendo games because they always have a little bit of fuzz on them because it's usually 720 or...
Yeah, and that's one thing I never got with the Switch. I mean, it's hardware-wise, it's not really that impressive.
But that's not the point of it.
I know.
The point of it is the portability, and Nintendo games are always just fun no matter... You know, no matter what kind of technology is going through it, because they're just amazing at making games like that. And this game, I gotta say, like, it's taken Animal Crossing and it's evolved into something that's really interesting. And I could go on and on about it, but there's even abilities to completely terraform your little island in this game.
Nice.
And it's really getting to the point where it's starting to become, you know, one of these little Minecraft build your own world games.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was literally grounded in just the living there aspect, the relationships with the villagers aspect. And while that's still there, this game expands upon the other parts of it in a very interesting way. And, you know, if anybody has a Switch who's listening to this and you've been looking for a great game to play, I think this is a must-have for any Switch owner. And it's a series that you just, I think, need to experience. It's very interesting, and the things that it does are really cool.
Nice. I don't have a Switch, but this is definitely something I would try if I did. I never really understood the allure to something like this, but I think you've explained it quite well. Tannis?
It's very hard to understand if you've never really played it.
I'm glad this was the pick of the week because I hear about it all the time and I had no idea exactly what it was. I don't have a Switch, but it sounded like it might be fun. But like I said, I had no idea like what it was all about, how you played it. So, yeah, another reason to get a Switch now, I guess.
Yeah.
If I didn't have enough already.
I've been hearing they've been hard to find recently.
Yeah, they made the Switch console sell out, apparently, in some places. So,
but apparently this game, Animal Crossing New Horizons, as of a few days ago, the number one selling game like within its first few weeks on a console ever.
Oh, wow.
It sold that quick. But there was hype behind it. People were desperate for this game because the last Animal Crossing game in the main series was New Leaf, which was on the 3DS and has been out for a very long time. So also keep in mind, 3DS games are 240p.
Oh!
So that's what we've been living with until this game came out.
Oh boy, yikes. All right, that's a good pick of the week then. I think we'd all be getting swept away if we had a Switch instead of archaeology at this point in time.
And that's why I'm currently only 50 archaeology.
All right, so I don't know if I need to ask you what you've been up to on RS aside from archaeology and in your free time playing Animal Crossing then.
Well, I've actually, I don't know, I've done a few clues recently.
Anything good?
Nah, nothing too much. Just I managed to get a couple skip tickets that I ended up using for like the next three clues. It was, I think it was the not skips, which are the ones that are good to get nowadays.
I'd rather people use those than use that stupid alt one clue solver.
Yeah, I don't ever use the clue solvers. I've just been doing clues for so long that even with the little puzzle boxes, I have those like almost to muscle memory for some of them.
Yeah.
It's like I can click so fast through those things, but yeah, I really love clues and it's the kind of thing that I really enjoy doing. And it has that lottery aspect to it.
Yes.
But at the same time,
that's why I like tetracompasses.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm nowhere near that yet, but that's one of the things archaeology I've been looking forward to the most.
All right.
I remember when they updated the knots in the elite clues.
Yeah.
It made them so much more annoying.
Combat colorblindness.
Yeah.
And
they actually added a couple new combinations.
Yeah. I don't know if it actually helped, did it, Tanis?
Not me so much.
Okay.
But
I just dislike the fact that they added like different puzzle combinations that have like four tracks instead of three in that one.
Yeah.
So I'm more likely to just buy the skipping tickets nowadays.
Well, there you go. There you go. All right.
I don't know.
How about you, Tanis? What you been up to this week? Dare I ask? Are we all still doing the same thing?
Yeah. Still all doing the same. I've been mining materials with Junior so I can afford the Dragonmatics on the main. I mean, I already had the one, but I need another one for the...
Right. The Mkando.
Mkando. Yeah. So
I'm 10 levels away from needing
it. I'm hoping I can get that done because, like I said, I like to do a whole build up, you know, for Star Wars, and so I want to play some Battlefront again and some Fallen Order, definitely.
Yeah, you guys had yours on May 4th. We have our first contact day on April 5th.
Yeah, so that's crazy, about a month apart.
Yeah. As for me, on RS, I got up to 80 archaeology, and in doing so, from 76, I did a bit of Stormguard, did the mysteries I could there. And as I mentioned earlier, I do all the mysteries I can as soon as I unlock them early enough. I get the lore pages, and then I move on. I pretty much have completed every collection and every mystery that I can up to the level where I'm at. So at this point, it's just about XP until I unlock more. I have 3 or 4 Mkando pieces, and I'm level 80, 130k to 81. And you're not able to get into the forge to make the Mkando pickaxe or Mkando matic until 83, unless you boost. So definitely going to get that last one before 83, so that feels good. Then I can maybe go back to Stormguard and admire some of the nice scenery there and whatnot. But beyond that, working on Yak Track, just completed the Yak Track task about screening soil. As I mentioned, the auto screener doesn't work. I'm not sure if that's a bug or not.
Oh, I need to be working on the Yak Track.
Yeah, still. You got until May 3rd. So, lots of annoying tasks on there. There's one that's coming up that makes that the choice is to make 2,000 soul runes or do something else. I mean, you know how long it would take to make 2,000 soul runes?
No, because I would never do it.
A long time. A long
time. No, because I'm probably never going to be able to do soul runes.
So, and I mean, there's just lots of weird tasks like that later on. They're not, you know, grindy per se. They're just really high level and kind of annoying to do. There's not much choice behind them. But beyond that, not too much else to report. Hopefully you guys have been enjoying our archaeology coverage here on the podcast all the way through because, I've enjoyed talking about it too. It's been something that's like, oh, I'm so looking forward to doing the show this week and everything, you know, we get to talk about and whatnot. It's really good. So I'm having fun with that. We do still plan on doing the lore talks at some point. We didn't know how deep we'd have to go into all the dig sites to get access to the lore, and we're not gonna cut any of those short. We're gonna have all the lore before we do it, so it's gonna be a matter of doing it whenever we're ready to do it, but we won't hold it back for any unnecessary reasons. So I think with that, and we'll probably do this one in May at some point, you can expect the Infernal Source one in May because you can complete all of the lore there somewhere in the 70s, I believe. So Infernal Source will definitely be first on that, and we'll be back with Diana and have a lore rundown of what we knew before, what we know after, and what it might lead to in the future on that. But that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. If you want full show notes, update.rsbnb.com. And of course, you know, the best way to get the podcast to you each and every week is to subscribe to the show. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, YouTube, Stitcher, Spotify, practically anything under the sun. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe or just search for RSBNB in your favorite podcast listener and it should come up. And I think with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
See ya.